Setting up shop.
Hello and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, a podcast where we help you as a creative person take your idea of your hobby from its hobby through to a proper business. My name's Dan. I'm a woodworker from Great Britain. And with me, as always, are Heidi, a potter from America, and Rasmus Lohan, a blacksmith from Norway. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
So thank you for joining with me once again. Always a pleasure to see you both. Today, we are going to talk about business maintenance. That sounds like a fascinating title, doesn't it? Business maintenance. What we're talking about today, guys, is literally that, in the sense of maintaining your business. Once you've got the ball rolling, you know things are going well, but we're going to talk a little bit about the reminders of things that you need to do in order for it to continue growing and not suddenly have something catastrophic happen or something even just mildly happen that can stop the flow and cause you a lot of grief and a lot of problems which could have been easily avoided. The first thing we're going to do is talk about the really, really obvious things with business maintenance. So from my perspective, in fact, all three of our perspectives, we all use machinery in our crafts. And one of the simple things that people really dislike doing or maybe don't know how to do is learning how to actually properly maintain those machines. So we've all done it. We've got a new box. We've opened it. We've got the shiny thing out and we've assembled it. We've had people help us make it. And then we immediately want to use it. It's well worth, if it's in the manual, it isn't always, if it's in the manual, checking up any maintenance points in the manual, check on YouTube, find someone who, either the manufacturer or another maker who has referenced things on there, and just do some maintenance checks before you actually set the machine running and get things sorted. I could bore you an awful lot about this particular subject. So in my current day job, I sell woodwork machinery, so I have had to deal with the situation quite a lot, but I'm not going to dominate the whole podcast by talking to you about degreasing and then spraying dry PTFE and other such things. If you wish to have a full conversation about that, you can follow me independently at Bevelwood UK and send me a DM. But other than that, maintaining your machines, absolutely, keeping things well lubricated, keeping things so that they're working efficiently, all these kind of things will have a long-term effect on allowing your efficiency to be kept up and helping you to maintain your level of speed and professionalism and all that kind of good stuff. Rasmus, in your particular case, is there something that you know yourself and other blacksmiths maybe just don't like doing, but they know it needs to be done? It's that job you keep putting off, but realistically should be done more regularly.
I mean, you basically said it. It's maintenance. And in my world, that's most importantly, the power hammer.
Because okay,
if that breaks down, the business breaks down.
That sounded too much like a slogan there.
Sorry. Yeah. But it's kind of true, though. If we have a power hammer, if it is a part of the production process, then it is such a vital part in saving time and doing the work that it is worth a lot of time and care to make sure it never, quote unquote, never breaks down.
Yeah.
I'm not perfect about this, but I try.
Yeah.
And it is, like you say, it's greasing things, it's oiling things, it's checking filters. It's all of those good things.
Yeah, checking filters is a big one, and certainly in my world. Anywhere where there's some form of dust extraction, just running an air hose over the end of a filter is not good enough. You really need to sort of regularly change them. And I know that costs money, but it does stop your machine from potentially clogging up, putting strain on the motor, potentially burning the motor out, which may even result in a fire in your workshop, which is particularly bad woodworking environment. But the other things that we're talking about as well, it's not just machinery maintenance and machinery upkeep. Anyone who is creating an awful lot will generate scrap. There are offcuts. There's offcut bins of metal. There's offcut bins of wood. And I know you mentioned in the pre-show, Heidi, as well, about the clay and just kind of almost the recycling process of clay, if you don't mind going into that a little bit.
When I'm doing like a lot of production pottery, so like batch after batch after batch, I have what's called a slip bucket. So the slip bucket, I'm constantly cleaning my hands in. I'm tossing like extra material and things in that bucket. And oftentimes what happens, because I'm constantly making, is that bucket will just get full of clay. So then that'll go off to the side in another brand new water bucket will be there so I can wipe my hands and everything else. But there's that extra bucket that's on the floor. And you don't want it to dry out because then, you know, you're going to have to like knock the clay out and then smash it with a sledgehammer and like, you know, get it all prepped and ready to reclaim. So it's a continuous maintenance. So once a week or whatever, I'm taking my clay bucket, my waste bucket, I'm reclaiming that on a plaster slab. So it literally is, you're just picking up the mud out of the bucket and putting it on a plaster slab, letting it sit there maybe 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, depending on how saturated it is, and then wedging it into clay that you can use again to throw. Or for me, I don't tend to throw my reclaim. I usually use it to make handles or do my, I do those medallion attachments and things, but it's definitely one of those things. If I don't keep up with it, I end up with like buckets of dry clay. And that is even more of a pain in the ass at the end, because then, you know, I have to get new buckets, because it's like, typically I have to smash the bucket to like, cause it's 5 gallons of dry dirt essentially. Yeah. And it's stuck in there. So that's one of those like really, some potters don't even do it. Some potters just, they throw their waste out and they don't do anything with it. But those potters are typically people that they don't have that continual process of, you know, I'm throwing this weekend, this week I'm glazing, this weekend I'm prepping, you know, like they don't have that amount of reclaim. But for me, I think probably next steps for me that I'm going to have to purchase a ball mill to like reclaim the clay, so I'm not wearing my body out. But that's a different type of maintenance.
So that's really interesting, actually, because you mentioned there specifically process, and you know, a lot of us are not so good at getting our processes in place. Other than the actual manufacturer, we might manufacture the process quite well, but just literally scheduling in some of this time. And I know we keep going on about it. I know we keep saying about, you know, work out your calendar, work out your diary. And don't get me wrong, I'm just as bad as everyone at actually getting this filled out. But if you're doing a workshop process regularly, and then you're thinking to yourself about, I'll go back to the analogy of what I know, you know, a dust extractor. Hey, if you know you're using that machine every day, like 4 or 5 days in a row, there's a good chance that you're going to need to replace a filter, possibly even weekly, if not monthly. And there are ways around that. There are extra systems you can put in place, but maybe you can't afford them right now. But it you know, it's not that hard to put a date in your calendar and say, hey, you know, this is a day where I'm going to empty all the bins in the workshop. I'm going to do all of the dirty jobs. This is just, maybe it's raining outside, you know, the family aren't around, or whatever the case may be, or maybe you can get them to come and help, provided it's not small children who are going to end up getting covered in dust or whatever. Although, you know, pottery, clay, mud sounds ideal to me from a younger person's perspective. You know, it's kind of the activity that realistically, you know, it's going to take maybe only a couple of hours. But just put it in the calendar and get it done. Like if you're good at not working weekends in the workshop, or maybe that's your only time, then in an evening during the week, just get that job done. You know, it's frustrating because it's not the creating bit. It's not the bit that we really enjoy doing, but it helps maintain things and carry the creativity on so much better. But it's also like tool sharpening though. You know, like all of us use some form of bladed tool, and how often do we allow ourselves to just not, you know, we kind of, I don't know about you guys, but I fall into the trap of, oh, well, I've now got 4 of that tool and I'll sharpen them all at once. And then I'll use that one. And then when that's blunt, I'll pick the next one up. I won't just top up the sharpening on that one. I'll just work my way through until the 4th one's then blunt as well. And then kind of groan and go, oh, I've got to resharpen all 4 now, rather than just having them on rotation. And just doing it little and often. Shout out to Trent Presler.
Yep.
You know, all of that kind of good stuff. But there's a lot of things that you can do little and often. And then there's other jobs that it's just like, stop putting it off, just get it done. Put some music on, you know, create a playlist if you need to. Distract yourself for 3 hours creating the playlist. But create a playlist for like cleaning the workshop, all of that kind of stuff. And just get the job done. Which this is going very into the weeds now on cleaning and replacing filters and emptying clay and stuff. This isn't what the whole episode is about.
I want to interject or shoot in a little thing, because depending on how you work, either you are working like massive projects one at a time, then of course in between those, take a day, not only to relax but also to just clean up the shop. Maybe if you have the headspace for it, notice things that can be improved upon, but like process-wise, storage-wise, like have a small break in between the large projects so you can improve upon and iterate upon the workflow. But if you are kind of like me, just in continuous production mode, it just changes what I'm producing, then being able to have a regular thing that says like, no, it is the first Friday of the month or whatever.
Yeah.
Now I need to stop working after lunch and just spend the rest of the day just cleaning.
It's Slop Bucket Saturday.
Something like it. Or for that matter, like I've struggled with this. If you feel like you're slow to get started, like I want to have a good 4, 5, 6 hours in the workshop to do something really nice and productive, to get into the flow of it. But you only have like 2 or 3 hours. Then maybe just getting to the workshop and doing some of the cleaning, some organizing, can really, really be a lifesaver.
Yeah.
But then you need to figure out sort of what system to go for and when to remind yourself to do it. Because doing it when you feel like it doesn't work, because nobody feels like doing a deep clean of the workshop.
I don't know.
If you do, maybe you're something wrong with you.
Like, you know, we're not going to mention the captain again here. clean shop, happy shop. We all know there's a definite difference in mindset if you walk into your workshop and there's just stuff everywhere and you're like, and you're not, you know, stuff's not where it should belong and all that kind of thing. Whereas if it is clean and tidy, it's definitely much more, you're more likely to get started. And I can say this because at the moment my workshop is almost the cleanest it's ever been. There's a small amount of shavings on the floor under the lathe at the moment. But the downside to that is, for me personally, I almost don't want to make anything because it will make it dirty. you kind of go this flip side. And the thing is, at the moment, I've got no commissions or jobs on. So I'm using that almost as an excuse to like, oh, but I don't want to make anything dirty, which is all just nonsense. I'll go out there and make some shavings shortly. Both you guys touched on something in your comments that we didn't discuss pre-show, but is also absolutely true. And this is the thing of, you've got to remember your business is you. So part of the maintenance is, and we've already alluded to it already in an earlier episode, but your health is really important, because if your business runs you into the ground, it's not fun. It's not fun for the people around you. And it becomes a chore and you can grow to hate it and all this kind of stuff. If you are not giving yourself time mentally and physically away from, you know, this thing and recognizing the signs when your body is telling you, hey, you know, you're physically struggling to do this job. Why is that? You know, does your back hurt? Does your arm hurt? Or is something hurting? Is it muscular? Is this, you know, if you've been bent over a lathe, or if you've been sat huddled around a potter's wheel or whatever at a particular angle for too long, your body's going to kind of let you know about that. And again, like yourself, Rasmus, you know, swinging a hammer for too much, if you hadn't bought the power hammer, if you were just relying solely on you know, shoulder strength and all that kind of stuff, it's really important to take that time to give your body a rest and also give your mind a rest as well, and not just get fully immersed in all of this kind of stuff. I've said that, and I know full well that all three of us are really bad at giving ourselves those breaks and that time away, unless it's like Christmas. You know, we'll always hold our hands up and say, you know, we're just as bad as everyone else at this kind of stuff, but it's well worth remembering, guys. It's well worth remembering that, you know, you don't live to work kind of thing. You work to live. And whilst you might be passionate about what you're doing and you want to share it with everyone and create lovely things for everyone, there are limitations. And there's nothing wrong if you like wake up in the morning and you've not got a looming deadline and it's nice outside and you go, hey, do you know what? Actually, I'm going to take a walk before I go to work, or I'm going to, you know, particularly if you've got like a pet dog or something, maybe you go on a longer walk than normal or you go to a different location. Because I've also often found when you take those moments, it can also inspire you in different ways that you hadn't realized you needed. It can kind of reinvigorate you or maybe look at a problem in a different way. And then when you step back into the workshop again, you can kind of go, oh, well, that's a really simple solution for this thing that I've been agonizing about for 6 months. I could just do this. So
What do you know about my life?
Much more than I should.
I guess there's some truth to that.
Yeah, it's a good mental health check as well, isn't it? So it's the maintenance thing. You remember the word maintenance. It's about making sure you don't stagnate. It's making sure that you, as a business and as a business person, you aren't just going through the motions. You're not getting stressed and fed up, particularly when it's off season, you know, if it's not in the run up to Christmas or a particularly busy time for yourself. I know one of our listeners runs is a chocolatier, runs a chocolate business. Well, if it's not the run up to Christmas or it's not the run up to Easter or Valentine's or any of those, you know, Mother's Day, any of those special days, and they're stressed at that point in time and they're finding themselves like, I keep churning these things out and maybe the sales aren't quite what they expected them to be. And this isn't something they've referred to us. I'm just grasping on a random case study here. Then, you know, that's where you kind of need to look at things and go, oh, hang on a moment. Why am I in this situation where I feel stressed? What external factor is happening? Or do I just need to take a day? Do I need to just have a play day, which we'll talk about in a future episode as well, and just allow yourself to fall back in love with the craft of what you're doing so that you don't stagnate and you don't sort of feel like going backwards. So having fun in the workshop is an important factor. I'll tell you one thing that I've done occasionally that actually really helps, and this does stray away marginally from it, but inviting fellow creatives around to your workshop or going and visiting them, you're not giving yourself a reason to tidy the workshop or anything like that. It's just that thing of, again, we've mentioned in the past, as creative people, we tend to be lone working quite a lot. That can get inside your own head a little bit, and not to labor the point, but being able to visit someone else's workspace, to be able to see how they do things, to offer encouragement or, you know, possibly even help, you know, on a project or whatever case may be, or just going around and visiting them and having a nice cup of tea or a shot of something stronger, if you'd rather. It's a nice, wonderful thing to be able to go and visit like-minded people and share conversations that maybe they can't have with their partners because they're fed up of hearing about it, that kind of thing. And just be able to reinvigorate that level of kind of interest in your own business and in theirs as well. It is a community thing. We're going to use the word community again because that is what keeps us all alive. So sales metrics.
Data.
Absolutely. A business maintenance element that Heidi is exceptionally good at, I'm not so great at, but I want to be, is actually understanding what business metrics are and B, producing them. And if you've got a website already and if you've got sales figures already, a lot of the data is already there. It's just about getting it into one place and being able to read it. Because one good point of business maintenance is checking on things like your sales metrics, establishing patterns, you know, checking out, oh, are there some seasonal items I haven't realized? Everyone always thinks seasonal. They think, oh, Christmas. But then equally summer, oh, barbecues in the UK and other countries. So all of a sudden, there's a lot more outdoorsy things. But we don't necessarily ramp up production of stock ready for those items. So if you're seeing peaks and troughs, maybe you can kind of level out and work out, oh, I can make more of X product for this time period and it will work a lot better. It can also potentially help us establish and understand a gap for a product or a product range, or even looking at adding value to an existing product. So if you know one sells really, really well and you haven't got another product that you make that you can add to it, maybe there's something that you can either buy in or add in as like an optional extra for people that would just boost that sale per purchase. You know, the average spend across what you're doing might well help quite a lot as well. And I'm going to descend upon Heidi now to talk briefly about something from that random selection of metrics that I've just been jabbering on about.
I like Excel. It's a really nice tool, but I also like notebooks. And a lot of my tracking is basically, how long does a kiln load take? what are my results from my kiln load? If I'm experimenting with a new glaze, say I have other glazes in there that I'm familiar with and I run all the time, but I'm opening a new product and I have new colors that I want to test out, I'm going to be documenting. So documentation and data. I'm going to be documenting how something works in that specific environment. So if it's a full kiln, it fires for 18 hours on like a medium pace to a certain temperature, and I have a certain hold, what happens with that color? Does the color come out the way I expect it to? And then I log that. That log is then something that I have photographs for. I have an app, and I'll tell you what that app is in a second. But the app allows me to have that data for that run and with that photo so that I know that I can repeat it based on that same information. Because a lot of what I do is heat science. A lot of it is predicated based on the environment that something is in. So if it's spring and the thing has been sitting for 3 weeks and I put it into the kiln and it explodes, then I know that my humidity in my room was too much and that there was still water left in my piece. And then I put it in the kiln and I bake it too quickly, right? I fire it, I ramp it up too fast. Yeah. Then it doesn't give the water time to evacuate. The same thing happens with glazes. If you had a certain glaze chemistry and you put it in the kiln and it's repeatable because it's a glaze that you get from the store, you're not mixing it yourself, then you don't have to log as much. But if you start mixing your own glazes, then you're going to be making sure that you have the right material on hand. And then you're going to be measuring things out and you're going to want to keep a logbook of how those glazes are produced so that you have the repeatability. So that log, along with like how many times that you use it and how expensive the raw material is and how long it takes to fire, all of that equates into a monetary deliverable. So if you're looking at, okay, one kiln load that I had these 30 different pieces in, then I sold those 30 pieces for X amount of dollars, and it took me this long to fire it, you can kind of identify like what that energy cost is, what the material cost is, just from load to load. So as you have that information, you can start charting it to see like, does that output change in January versus July? Is there a difference in November? So then you can start seeing those fluctuations in your business so that you can identify just from an environment, just from a material, just from a, you know, what you're putting into your kiln, you can start graphing that. So those data points are really helpful, but they're also helpful from a standpoint of being able to take a flash picture of what your year was.
Yeah.
So if you have all those data points, you can pretty much gather a lot of different information that maybe doesn't drive monetization, but it does drive like when maybe I should change my elements, because that is a thing on the kiln. Maybe I need to look at when I should take a vacation. So if I have all those data points and I know like this window of time is when I'm not firing my kiln, or this window of time is when I'm not having to throw a bunch of stuff, that is going to be a good window for me to take a vacation. So like having those data points and collecting that information and putting it somewhere that you can actually build something usable from, like every metadata point that you are able to collect on the regular, not just like, oh yeah, I remember to collect this data point once this year. What's one cataloged date going to do for you? You really need to like every single time you do an action, be cataloging like this did this, or this took this amount of time, or this took this amount of material, or whatever. If you are that type of person, which I am that type of person, I can see with math and graphs and everything ebbs and flows in my business year over year. So Dan, you were talking about like some of the stuff that I do at the end of the year with my data, is that I'm able to say like, oh guys, like I surpassed last year. I threw 3,000 pieces and last year I threw 2,000 pieces. Or, you know, because I'm even more in depth with my data points, I have everything in there from like, I made 750 sunflower vessels
Yeah.
So if I know that and I know how much material it takes to make a sunflower vessel, then I can say like, oh, well, I had this much expense just on this little point. So that also helps me at the end of the year or quarterly or whenever you want to do it, to look at my price structure and make sure that I'm paying myself enough, but the business is also recouping the costs appropriately from, you know, what those expenses are. So it's have what you will. Like if you, if you're interested in this part, like if you're interested in how much time you spend, say you just want to know, like, how much time do I neglect my child? you can have that data point. If you want to know how many kilowatts you've been using just to fire your kiln or just to run your power hammer or just to run your lathe, you can get data specifically for that. So like, say on a Saturday, you know that you ran your power hammer for 15 hours. I don't know if that even makes sense. 15 hours running a power hammer seems a bit outrageous. But if you know that window and you know what you can get your reports from your electrical company that tell you on that day, you use so many kilowatt hours of electricity. So you can start to kind of get an idea of like exactly how much energy you were using so that you can either decide, is that piece of equipment, do I need to upgrade because it's using more power than it should be using? That also is a key indication for me. If it's starting to draw more power, that my elements need changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's taking, if I have multiple data points that can tell me that, like if it's taking longer to fire to get to a certain temperature at like a nominal, like it's not cold outside kind of thing, then I can kind of identify something's going on with my kiln. Yeah. It needs some attention. Having those kind of, if you're not an intuitive person, I tend to neglect things unless I have data. So like the data helps me to recognize, okay, there's a problem. I'm using more water. I'm using more electricity. I'm having these other problems. Those data points can help lead me to the right resolution if there's a problem with my equipment, or if I'm curious, like how many gallons of water do I use on a day that I have to mix glaze?
I love the fact that I know that whereas most of us get caught in a doom scroll of social media, yours is a doom scroll of your own data.
I mean, it can get a little bit
but it's also fascinating because it's knowing how to set up that data read in the first place, and obviously in your instance, like the kiln and things like that, it has that built-in functionality to a certain extent. Obviously, and you know, speaking for a group of the other listeners here who probably aren't quite that situation, you know, if you're using a sewing machine or whatever, there isn't that kind of feedback, as it were. But it's really interesting that you can kind of go to one extreme to the other. But equally, what I picked up on there that I found really interesting was the fact that depending on the way that you generate the data, and if you go into the weeds of actually let's look at how much water did I use on X day when I know that I was doing this process, or how much electricity did I use on this day when I know I was doing this process, and you can suddenly really start looking into, the reason why I always seem to be short on money in the summer isn't just because my products aren't selling, but because I'm using a lot more power because I'm having to power, you know, coolant systems in order to allow this process to work properly. Again, going back to our listener who's a chocolatier, you know, summer months must be horrific for her because if she's not putting any form of horrible artificial preservative in there to stop them from melting too quickly, she's got a real problem on her hands, and particularly as she's now got a shop, hasn't she, with a shop front? You know, you can't just lay all chocolates out right in the window with the sun beating down on it in the middle of summer unless you've got an air-conditioned workspace. So there's an additional cost there. I mean, that's a fairly sort of obvious one in a way, but there are things that we may not have taken into account that we can't put our finger on. What's the money drain here? What's making that difference here? And you can't figure it out. And yeah, do you know what? Some people, myself included, I love the data. It's the knowing how to get to it and generate it and what I should be looking at. And I think this goes on to a point, Rasmus, that you've mentioned in the past, and I think we're going to cover in a couple of episodes time, but at some point in your business, and this could be as part of your sort of maintenance, if you like, it's well worth considering speaking to experts about certain topics. So yes. If, for instance, you know you know that you've got a good business model, your product's selling well, but you know you've got the pricing right, you know you're making a profit, you're able to pay yourself, all of those kind of things, but there seems to be something just not quite right with the business. You always seem to be chasing something or at a loss or whatever. It would be well worth hunting around, and don't just go to the first one you see or because it's a friend of a friend or anything like that, but it'd be well worth getting some form of business analyst, like people to speak to. Yeah. And see if they're able to come in and look over your business with you. Maybe it's something to do with marketing. Maybe it's something to do with procurement. Whatever the case may be, it would be well worth asking an independent observer who is trained as a business person to take a look at those parts of the aspect of your business and recognize the fact that you will probably have to pay them, and whether that's proper financial payment, which is then billable and, you know, offsets against tax, or whether or not, you know, if someone's going to come in and say, oh, well, if you give me X product, then I'll do an analysis for you. It's not that I'd be suspicious as much as I would be kind of thinking, how much of your time are you actually giving? You know, this isn't, I would rather pay for the service and sort of, and bill, you know, be billed by the person and say, right, this is a professional kind of consultation, rather than someone who is a friend of a friend coming and saying, oh, well, if you give me X, then I'll give you an hour of my time or whatever the case may be. Have you ever done anything like that, Rasmus? Is there something, I know you've kind of mentioned it in the past.
No, I haven't yet, but it is one of those things that I feel like I should, if nothing else, then to be kind of reassured that I am doing most of the things correctly, because I don't know. I've been sort of inside of my own little bubble for so long that it's really hard to see, quote unquote, what I'm doing at some point.
Yeah.
And I know I'm really bad at certain things. I know I'm tried to do them, but I don't have an objective observer coming in and going like, yeah, that can be better, but that was good. Or everything is fucked. Let me help you. Like there's scales to this and I'm open to all of them. But this is very much a thing I've reached where certain other parts of the business is so much harder to improve upon.
Boom.
But just finding someone who is an expert in something I know nothing about, but I know is a quote-unquote crucial part of running a successful business long-term. It's like, yeah, that's easy for someone who's an expert in that thing to fix for me, but it's really difficult for me to invest the time to learn it good enough so that I can more or less objectively, and it will never be objectively because it is my business. I'm sort of inside of here having excuses for all of the things. But having someone from the outside can go in and come and say like, no, whatever your excuse for and thinking this is the right way of doing it, it doesn't work. You need to reframe, redo all of that. And you'll probably see all of this potential benefit. There are people out there who are good enough and should be able to do that. But like you said, you should check their credentials maybe, depending on how crucial it is. If you are a hobbyist and just want to take the first little step into having a website, then yeah. Giving a couple of the product you're making to someone who likes them and like you and want to help out is a good starting point. But like Dan say, maybe qualify or quantify the time they are giving to you so that you also know what the time is worth when it comes to, okay, now I have the money. Now I need to take a bigger step. Now, can you spend a day and help me with this? And you kind of already know more or less what to expect to pay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I find it interesting, actually, you say that because, you know, you bring it up. It's obviously something that you back of your mind, but I think you're the only one out of the three of us who hasn't had some form of business advice or mentorship from, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've had friends help in the past who've given me a lot of good advice. And, you know, that kind of fell by the wayside because my hours shifted around and changed quite a lot. But I really appreciated what they did for me at the time, and it helped quite a lot. But then I've also had, carrying on from that, you know, we're all quite fortunate, I think, that we know a lot of people in a lot of different fields. So before I got started, you know, I spoke to a good friend of ours who at the time was doing an awful lot of graphic design and brand management and that kind of stuff. So I was able to talk about the entire background of what I'm doing and just kind of ask the question, do you think this is viable? Do you think this is actually something people would want to buy as a range or as a brand kind of thing, rather than me just trying to find a way to sell products that I like? So we had quite a good open and honest conversation. But again, despite the fact that he's got all this knowledge and everything, good friend. So therefore the financial recompense was not as much as it should have been. And I'm still constantly aware of that. So there is definitely an element between getting an assistance in that way, or indeed, you know, listening to something like we're talking about now. You know, the podcast is kind of a free resource unless you subscribe to our Patreon, and we're grateful for that. And the flip side to that is, if you pay for a specific service, if those people don't take the time to know who you are and what your kind of why you're doing what you're doing, what are your standards and your guidelines? I was going to say morals. I know that's the wrong word, but you know what it is that you stand for and the whole purpose behind your business. And they just kind of roll out the generic, oh well, this is what I always do with the business. Then that's not a good investment in time and in money, and that's not necessarily going to be able to help. And I know, Heidi, that, you know, you've potentially, the same as I have, you know, you've kind of attended some seminars maybe, or you've been on a thing recommended to you by some people. And sometimes it's beneficial, other times it's very generic. And so therefore some bits of it are kind of helpful or not. But, you know, is there anything that's kind of stood out for you that really was like an eye-opening moment when you had that kind of you attended a thing or someone said something to you and you thought, oh, okay, you know, that's actually really helpful?
I would say, like, just in general, quitting on those people is like a good maintenance move too. Like you were saying, when you may not be hiring it out, but you're seeking the advice and then they're coming to you and they're giving you the cookie cutter advice for like a business that makes widgets and doodads. Yeah. And say like they just have a machine that just like runs everything through. And so there's no like real human involvement. Then it can be really difficult to like take that advice to heart,
yeah,
and implement it. And sometimes because we maybe feel, I don't know, personally as a business owner, I'm not as confident as a business owner as I am a potter.
Yeah.
So I tend to look at people that have business acumen, that are entrepreneurial. I put them on a pedestal, whether or not they deserve it or not. So sometimes I might take their advice to heart more than I should. And one of the things that I have to maintain, just to go back to the you know, purpose of this episode, one of the things that I have to maintain is a grounded perspective on where my expertise is, and not to just trust everyone around me that they know better than I do. I'm now 5 years into this business. I understand my clients. I understand what my capacity is. I understand where I want to grow, where I don't want to grow. I have certain expectations of myself. So a lot of times I get people that come in and they want me to expand, because they think that this business is a great model and it's really, it would be easy to expand it and make all this money and whatever. But then I would be less of a potter and more of an entrepreneur. And that's not necessarily the direction that I want to go in. So like having those level set moments through the year to be like, am I going the right direction with the number of clients that I have? Am I going the right direction with the advice that I'm getting from certain people? Am I pursuing the right directive with my product line? When you're also a creative and maybe an artist at heart, am I fulfilling the desires of my heart with it? All these different categories of maintaining your spirit, maintaining the finances, maintaining the work, maintaining the product line, maintaining the equipment, maintaining the space, doing your taxes, all of those ebb and flow with what's important during different parts of the year. So yeah. going back to that point of like, if you know that in June, you're going to be really busy with production, you know, in June, you're not going to introduce new products. It's just sometimes it's innate. Sometimes you have to put it in your calendar to remind yourself that don't go into that rabbit hole in June.
or sometimes you need to make a mistake a couple of times before you realize that, oh, this doesn't work.
right. So I don't know, like, as far as the people part goes, the people trying to coach you, the people trying to get business from you, like there are people that will look at a small business and go, what can I take?
Oh yeah.
What can I take from this person who is very sweet? So you have to be careful, because some people will offer to do services for you for a bowl, for a mug, for a rose, and then never follow through. Or what they follow through with is like, doesn't equate. So you're right, Rasmus, like making sure that, you know, whatever they're asking of you, did you ask for something from them, or are they just offering because they want something from you?
Yeah.
Are they just really good at figuring out like, what does this person need? What can I promise them? Because I really like that thing that they have.
Yeah.
And not getting too caught up in, you know, whatever psychology that you have with trying to please people. Like, I don't know if you guys are like that, but I'm very much like, I want everybody to be happy. So I overextend myself in that way. And I overtrust. And in some regards, because of my, like, I'm a potter, not an entrepreneur kind of like difficulties, I overtrust in that capacity too.
One of my, my favorite, I say favorite, that's the wrong word, but kind of examples of that kind of situation is, thankfully you don't have so much of it now, or I certainly don't. Maybe it's just because I'm not as visible as I used to be on social media, is when people reach out to you for a free product, which they're going to then talk about on their social media, and that's going to get you loads of business. And their qualification for why that's definitely going to get you loads of business is, look how many followers I have, and look how often I post and all this kind of stuff. And if I do something, you'll definitely get an uptake in business. There is absolutely no way that anyone can quantify that. Like, if you provide what you provide them is relatively inexpensive to you, and they do exactly as they say they're going to do, and they make a little video and they put it out, and you know, there is no way that you can guarantee, and that anyone can guarantee, I will get you X amount of sales of this product based on this content that I'm going to put out. You can't guarantee it. It's, you know, the algorithm dictates, not the individual. But you know, that's assuming that person is actually genuinely going to still make that content after you've sent them the widget or the doodad. I've been quite sort of open-minded to that in a way. I've got some products at the moment that are on loan to someone who's got quite a high-end, for want of a better word, Airbnb business, but they're wanting everything in this place is made by local craftspeople. And the idea is that people go and use the space and they go, oh, I really like this wooden plate. Where can I get one? And it's not quite figured out yet whether she would sell them that particular product or whether it would be send them to me and then I would, you know, get the sale through the website or whatever. Now, if I was exceptionally cynical, I'd be like, well, hang on a minute. I've not had any payment for the products that are there. They're just using my products and it kind of like they look good in pictures and whatever. But having gone out of my way to actually physically meet the person, and I have stood in their home and I have gone to the venue and I've experienced the whole ethos behind what they're doing, I'm quite relaxed about the fact that they've had some products from me for a little while. And I have no doubt that at some point it's going to result in something. What that may be, whether it's further business, whether it's inquiries from people about making something else, I can't say. But that I find is a very different thing from anonymous person on the internet, or even, you know, someone coming up to you at a market stall who you have no idea who they are and they just show you a page and claim of numbers. Because the problem is with that is it can get really exciting. People can go, oh, well, you know, I'm this person here and everything I talk about on my social media is associated with exactly the kind of thing that you do. I've got X amount of thousands or millions or whatever followers. And if you give me this thing, then I'll do that. And it can be quite exciting. And do you know what? Actually, from a marketing perspective, it's a toss of the coin whether you want to take that chance or not. if it's a regular everyday product, if it's your one-off that you've spent 6 months making, I probably wouldn't just give that over.
I know of a few knife makers and people in that style of business who have just sent out knives to celebrities, to big podcast hosts, to people they admire.
Slightly different angle, though, isn't it?
Kinda. You're not really asking for something in return, and that, I think, helps a lot.
Yeah.
But also, you need to trust so much in the quality of your product. Maybe I've only heard the success stories, of course. Maybe they never talk about how many they sent out to people that never got back to them, or how long it took for them to actually get good enough, and they were sending out shit knives until they got to a point where, like, no, now the quality is good enough and people start responding to it. So you can use various parts of this as one kind of metric, but then you need to kind of know what you're getting yourself into, what the risk is. In your case, Dan, having met the person, having sort of started to develop a more or less familiar bond with them and recognize to what degree do I think I can trust them? Well, the cost to you personally of these plates are not that much. That can be a very easy thing to give over to someone, because you can write it off immediately and just say, like, they are gone. If I get them back, that's good. If they're sold, even better. But that's an easy gamble to make. If I were to make a sword and send that off to someone and hope that they will pay me for it, that's a very bad business deal.
Yeah. It's definitely different kind of different elements. You know, we don't want to bang the drum on it too much. As I said, thankfully, it doesn't tend to happen anywhere near as much now. But it's definitely something that, again, for that, from the maintenance perspective of that kind of almost just your own sanity. I'm an overly cautious person, so this is always why I'm going to say it. Like, don't get kind of too excited. You know, like, I mean, Raz, you and I, we attended a massive event in January. We took your business there. We set everything up and, you know, we looked at it and we kind of went, oh, okay, there's some ideas for another year if we do it again. And at the moment, that event, whilst it was a good flag waving event and you got a lot of feedback from it, there was a lot of things you know how to do if you did that sort of event next time. There's a lot of product ideas or conversations you had with an understanding the kind of businesses who would be likely to buy from you. I hope you don't mind me saying, but so far that's not necessarily resulted, as far as you can absolutely tell, in any sales.
No,
so from a financial perspective, if you were just going, oh, right, money in, money out, where's my return? It looks bad. But as we've always said, you don't know what, you know, when that person who's picked your card up at that event is going to ring you up and then have the conversation with you that might well lead to quite a lucrative partnership or dealing. So there's always risk. There's always kind of elements to be aware in there. I think we're kind of straying off the topic and chatting into other waters at the moment. So we're going to wrap it up a little bit. Hopefully this hasn't been too dry an episode, but it's always worth just basically taking a step back and having a breath, isn't it? And just looking at things from a different angle and just kind of assessing the data in front of you. And then if you find there's a hole in the data, work out how to gather that data so that you can then move forward with it.
Can I add one thing? Going back to like the data part, there are a lot of makers that also are into IT and they make apps specific to whatever your trade is. For me, there's one that's called Claymate, and Claymate is basically a product log app. So I can make sure that I can repeatedly make something so I can put into it like the weight of the clay or whatever. But just, I wanted to add that before and I forgot to, because I couldn't find the app on my phone. But I'm sure there are a ton of other apps that kind of do similar things or data tracking. Like, I know, Dan, you said like, oh, well, if I don't know how to track that data, then like, what good is it if I don't know how to use it? But there are opportunities if you Google to see like what apps are out there, or if there's a specific thing that you do that's repeatable that you need someone to just create a worksheet for you, so that you can log information. It doesn't cost that much. You can go on Fiverr.com and usually there's people on there that are expertise with Excel, and they'll make something for you, or, you know, you can work with one of your IT friends to come up with just something little that you can use to input data just so that you have it, so that you can capture certain things. But I know it's like one of those things, like you don't know that it exists until you start looking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't know what you don't know.
And I think also personally, like, it is really important to actually take notes of things and to every once in a while sort of clock yourself, see what you're doing, see how you are spending your time. And you can always go by a hunch and sort of figure things out, but your perspective is always from inside your own head and never fully objective. And something I'm trying to do sort of better and better is to use a stopwatch on my phone. Okay, I'm starting to work for this client. I'm starting the timer. I'm focusing on this. When I need to run off and answer emails, I pause it and I can resume it. But that gives me a very accurate measure of how much time did I actually spend on this customer. And then compare that to my pricing. It was like, did I make money? Did I break even? Did I lose money because I spent too much time in this end or that? And I think I mentioned that well back as well, like, film yourself in the workshop. See how you move through the space and see where's the hangups. Because, like, yeah, if I can do this operation super efficiently, but it takes me forever to set everything up and line it up perfectly, then is it actually worth it? But yeah, Heidi, you're a massive nerd. I just have to say it when it comes to the spreadsheets and all of it. And I love it because, like, you are pointing out a lot of things that I should consider myself. Like, you were mentioning just the efficiency of the electrical equipment you have, and especially your kiln. I was like, my mind immediately went to just read off the label what it's supposed to consume and just multiply by hours. But like, no, if it is worn out, then that changes. And that is a really good thing to figure out. And you wouldn't have known that beforehand, before it was crucial. And then, especially in your line of work, like, if you don't have a kiln, you don't have a business.
Right. Yeah.
And you can get really nerdy with it as well, because most motors have an hour's lifespan, not as in 1 hour, but there will be like 15,000 hours and then you will need to do whatever. If you think of it this way, and this is something I always find funny, right? So pretty much every country in the world, if you have a car and you're going to look after it, you need to do some form of annual service to it. And it will have recommendations in the manual of when you hit X amount of 1,000 miles, then this should be replaced on it. And you hit this many 1,000 miles, this should be replaced on it. That sort of thing doesn't really exist for a lot of machinery, but it's still true. Like, don't be surprised if a drive belt breaks when you've really pushed like a cheap sander through its paces for, you know, and you've been using a worn out belt because you can't buy another one at the moment and you really need the project to be finished. Like, things like that, you know, that they need to be replaced every now and then, and keeping consumables of that kind of thing in the workshop really does help. So yeah, definitely all of those things, you know, keeping some form of digital journal, or even like a paper journal. It's not as easy to extrapolate the data from it and work out peaks and troughs. But I find, because I'm old, that it's easier to scribble notes down either in, you know, the notes thing on my phone or in one of the various journals I've got lying around. What I also like is the fact that if you use like sketchbook/journal, quite often you'll scribble things in the corners and it's really good fun to look back through and go, oh, that, as you've done, Rasmus, there's that design for that thing that I thought up new last week, and this is from 3 years ago, and I'd actually already solved the problem I'm now trying to solve again. Or, you know, you've got really fun little kind of doodles and all that kind of stuff. And who knows, you might even end up shoving a compendium of them together in a book, and there's another product you can sell, because that is the way my brain is orientated, I'm afraid. Okay, guys, good to have a chat. And as I say, hopefully everyone enjoyed all of the conversations here, and some of it will be relevant to all of you, I am sure. It would be remiss of me not to talk about upcoming things, such as the fact that Rasmus and I are going to be at Makers Central in the UK in 3 weeks' time. That is happening on the 15th of May.
I believe that's the 18th and 19th.
18th and 19th of May. I should really know. I live here. Yeah, 8th and 19th yes. of May is when that is happening. Unfortunately, Heidi won't be joining us physically. We'll have to have a virtual Heidi wander around in the chaos.
We could probably have Lucas make a puppet.
I don't know if he's got time for that, and I'm not sure if Heidi would want to self-made necessarily. I think, you know, and particularly not as who's going to operate it, and we're not going down that route. That we will both be there. So come and make yourself known to us. And if you do just come up to us and start talking to us, please let us know why we know you and where from.
Yes.
Because, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that we've all had those experiences where people talk to you as if we know who you are. And it's always just good to have that interaction. And let us know if there is anything that you think we should talk about or we've not covered deep enough. And we'll be happy to keep that for a future episode or have a conversation with you then.
And we will probably have stickers with us.
Are you making promises that you're going to have to then maintain to keep now, Rasmus?
I am afraid so.
Okay. Rasmus is going to have stickers available, ready for me. Okay, excellent. I look forward to that. Until then, guys, as I always ask, what is the one thing that you have done since we last recorded to move your business forward? And we'll start with Heidi.
To move my business forward, I've just been doing my business, to be honest. I have a pretty large order that I'm working on for Mini Cooper. And it's been super fun because they are an amazing client who lets me just kind of play and give them whatever I come up with. And so I've kind of been in that like world of, we'll talk about it later, but world of play. So it's been good for me. Good for my heart, good for my business. So.
It's also been really good to see the social media of you utilizing your new space and like literally racks of stuff piling up everywhere. And it's not in the way. You can just kind of move it and still optimize.
Yes.
Great. It's fantastic.
Yes. This to the right of me, if you're listening and not watching, I have it's called a Baker Speed Rack that I redid for my studio. So instead of Baker's trays, it just has hardy board, like cement board that are cut to size. And this has made a huge difference because I can just take the rack from my wheel, move it over to my finishing area, let things dry, and then do all of my finishing, take each of the boards out, take them down to the kiln. When I'm ready to do the glazing, bring them back up and do all that, and then take them back down. It's a huge yeah. improvement.
Yeah, it's things like that, bizarrely, really, I get really quite excited by. I'm like, oh, isn't that amazing? You know, and then try and work out how I could do something similar, even though it's not 100% necessary, because it just sounds fun. Raz, what about yourself?
I have launched a new product and completely sold out.
Ooh.
Wow.
When you say completely sold out, could you clarify how many of new product? Because if it's just one, it's not quite as exciting.
Oh, yeah. No, it's more than one, luckily. When I was over in the US for Maker Camp, I was chatting with Cliff Dutton, a brilliant blacksmith. And I had been making a guillotine tool, sort of a tool holder, blacksmith helper kind of thing. Just to people who know, knows. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. It's a tool for blacksmithing. Really nice, really handy, but it tends to be heavy. Cliff made one that he's been selling in the US that I really, really liked. I was chatting with him about it, and I got his permission to iterate on his design, make it my own here in Norway. I put that up as a Facebook post saying, I've been thinking about this. I got 5 pre-orders. I ordered a part laser cut. I ordered 10 sets. I received 12 because the laser cutting company I'm using is awesome. I sold all of the 12, and I have a couple of back orders.
Excellent.
And it's not only the tool, it is also dies for the tool. So I've started to stock up on tool steel. And that allows me suddenly to not only make more tools for myself, but also I can sell just the steel for to other blacksmiths. And I've been doing a bit of that as well. So even though I've already been doing like selling the grinders and the hardening ovens for a while now, I'm sort of accidentally ended up expanding that market, that side of the business a bit.
And that's fantastic. Sounds good.
It has been going a lot better than I expected. And it's a nice feeling every once in a while.
Excellent. So what have I done? I've had my first of two assessments. So I applied to become a registered professional turner. And by the time this comes out, I should hear my result. I think it's going to be positive. It's got to go up for the guy who came and did the assessment was very positive. He just needs to send the paperwork in, and then it goes before a board of people who just approve. And then I potentially get a certificate and a nice badge to sew onto my jacket, like a biker. And then tomorrow morning, so that was last Friday, and then tomorrow morning, I'm going to have a second assessment, which is to see whether I am approved to be a course instructor. That would be whether I would be approved by the Association of Turners of Great Britain. So my aim this year was to kind of become more professional, and not in the sense of that I'm less professional now, but to these kind of professional qualifications, as it were, kind of, it's not just tick box exercise. They do kind of add gravitas and kind of lend meaning, and also give me a reason for acting and teaching and doing things in a certain way to uphold standards. So that's what I'm kind of doing. And then in the midst of all of that, because I've not been doing a lot of wood turning, much like we were discussing earlier, it's meant that my brain's steered away from doing repeat work and trying to optimize that time. And it started actually having a bit more creativity of ideas in my head of some possibly more artistic things that I would like to do that they're still functional, but they're not part of the overall Bevel brand. They're just kind of having a bit of fun and pushing the skills and things like that. So that's been quite nice. I had one pop into my head earlier that I'll share with you guys in the after show, but not publicly on here, because I don't want anyone to steal my idea. It's gonna take me a good couple of years to make it. So I don't want anyone to steal my idea and do it before me. So yeah. If there is no other business to talk about, then I will share our social medias. So first of all, anyone who wants to email us, you can email us info@settingupshop.com, shop spelt SHOPPE. And then following on from that, we have obviously all of the lovely things. So myself is at Bevelwood UK on Instagram, and bevelwood.co.uk is the website. Heidi is at Whitehall Pottery, and just Whitehall Pottery pretty much everywhere. And Rasmus is Rasmus Lowen on Instagram, and lowensmed.no is his website, I believe, which one day I'll pronounce properly. But, you know, we'll get there in the end. So thank you everyone for listening. I hope to hear from you soon, either on our social media or on email. And until next time, we'll hope you have a good time with your business. Bye.
Bye-bye.